to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Off Stage and On the Air, performance number 464. I am Lisa Sheps. I am joined by my co-host, Nicole Shiro.
Hello!
Hello!
You're listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3. You probably already know this, but I can tell you anyway. We stream this live at KOOP.org. Remember, if it's theater, it's on Off Stage and On the Air. Do not go away.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world.
Best friend screwed you over.
It is Wednesday, May 9th, 2018. On the show today, we have Theater Unblocked and their show Cry It Out by Molly Smith Meltzer. And then later on, we'll be talking to Jarrett Productions and their production of Seminar by Teresa Rebeck. And of course, we'll have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, Wisconsin, Wyoming, and other states north and south. Stick around. Yeah, states north and south. I said that.
Yeah, I realized you did, and I was like, she said that.
But, I switched from cities to states. It's magic here on Off Stage and On the Air.
Well, you know what? There are both.
So
you're A-okay.
That is the rumor. So I want to check in with Nicole Shiro. We missed you last week. You were taking your brother to a dental something or other.
Yes.
Likely excuse.
He had to have a whole bunch of stuff going on in his mouth.
You know, Queen Elizabeth went into the dentist. She had a crown.
Ha!
Anybody?
Ba-dum-bum.
Ba-dum-bum. Okay, sorry. Sorry. George Washington went in. He got a bridge.
Woo! Okay, you're really, on fire
really just making
today.
This up right as I go along. There was a big hole in the ground. It went to the dentist and got a cavity.
Ah!
All right, so sorry.
But yeah, he's good.
He's good. Excellent. How are you?
I'm good.
Okay.
How about that? How are you, Lisa?
I'm good.
Are you?
I'm good. Let's introduce the folks that are here, and
it's
then we'll
party
talk
in here today.
It is. We have lots of people here. I'm not going to go in any particular order. I'm going to go in the order that I have it in my little thing here. We have Jenny Lavery. Say hello, Jenny.
Hey.
We have Lee Eddy. Hi, Lee.
Hi.
Christian Davis. Kristen Davis.
Hello.
Or Christian. You know, whatever. David Jarrett.
Hello, hello.
Brian Bradford.
Hello.
Sarah wait, it rhymes with meringues. Sarah Zerang.
Hello.
And Cullen Morgan.
Glad to be here.
And then I just dawned on me, we have an extra person that's not on my list.
It's Lily.
Oh, Lily Wolf, of course. I should have known that. Welcome one and all. First of all, I need to apologize for our missing co-host, Mr. Nick Mayo. He reminded me that I had never posted the show that he hosted with Michael Hartman on March 21st. That was performance 457. And I didn't get around to listening to it till yesterday or a couple days ago. What a wonderful job they did. I did. I giggled. They did a great job.
Well, it's Michael and Nick, guys. Yes.
It's Michael and Nick, and there was just some sweet moments in there, and they're both leaving town. They're both leaving us. And
Michael has left. Michael's gone. Michael left yesterday. Yes.
Yesterday. All right.
Nick soon.
I'm going to do we rarely do a tease for what's coming up, but next week people are going to want to tune in. You know why?
Because dun dun dun.
I will be interviewing Harry Connick Jr.
Dun, dun,
the
dun,
only
dun.
One. And so you will step in and listen to that wonderful interview. He and I are real good friends. We're like this. I'm the thumb. Those of you watching the webcast will see that. So lots of stuff to talk about today. One of the things that it's award season. So normally this is Tony Award season, as all of you know. Is everybody up on what's going on with the Tonys this year?
Yes.
There are people nominated.
Good. There are
and
people
there are
and
shows nominated.
What?
Just in case you were wondering.
Right. So normally at this time, the Tony website usually has a printable ballot sheet that we give out to our guests starting about now, and then we compile them all up after the Tonys and see how good we are. But in the past few years, they have not been doing the printable sheet till much later. So I was very excited. I thought I found one created by Playbill, and I printed it out, and I printed a whole bunch of copies. It was for 2017.
No! I was about to say someone else but we did already it, had but some. They did it last year.
Yeah, that's
a bummer.
So they did. They had some award winners already for the Outer Circle Critics Awards, and these are the out-of-town critics, and so this gives us a sort of a hint of who's going to be winning, but things like The Band's Visit is not eligible this year because they were eligible last year because they were off-Broadway. So it doesn't really, because we all know The Band's Visit is going to win the best musical, right?
Sure.
Yeah,
sure.
Right. Yeah. Silence really works well on the computer. So for Outstanding Broadway Play, Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, big surprise. Outstanding new musical was SpongeBob SquarePants, and somebody has got to explain to me why this show is so good. I don't get it. But actually, we're going to talk about this a little later. There's an interview, there's a discussion with Jesse Green, and I was about to say Mel Gusso, who no longer writes for the Times. Who's our Times
Brantley?
Ben Brantley. And they said the same thing. They said, don't get the SpongeBob thing, although they gave both of them gave it rave reviews. So, hold on. This is spread over two pages. The outstanding new off-Broadway play is Admissions, and I'm not as familiar with the off-Broadway shows as I should be. Are you, Brian?
I'm not.
No, oh wait, did we check that microphone? Say something in that microphone.
Testing.
It works.
I was about to say I heard them say hello.
By the way, this is a quiz for everybody here. Does anybody know the reason why sound men say testing 1, 2, 3, 4?
I know,
anybody?
But I can't say it.
Hello? Silence again?
No.
Okay, it's because the dancers already took 5, 6, 7, 8.
Hey!
True story.
You haven't done that in a while.
Oh, I do it at my theater all the time. So the outstanding book of a musical is Mean Girls. Let's see, what else do we want to do?
Kristen's got her money on Mean Girls, that's what she said.
For best musical?
Oh, yeah.
Kristen, I will bet you because you will lose because it's going to be The Band's Visit.
Thanks, Lily.
Sorry, it's just it. So, there's a wonderful couple of articles in the New York Times. There's links on our site, offstageonair.com. One is, it's both Ben Brantley and Jesse Green saying, who's going to win, who should win, and who's not there. So for best play, Ben Brantley said Harry Potter and the Cursed Child will win and should win. Hmm. And this, so Ben Brantley and what's his name? Jesse Green are not on the same page. So,
no, I was about to say they really weren't on the same page on this.
Jesse Green says who will win, Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. They agree, but should win The Children, which I have to admit I don't remember much about.
I saw that, and it's excellent.
Yeah. So give us, I was trying to, without going back and looking at the reviews, I was trying to remember what it's about. What is it?
There's a couple in a remote English village, and there's been a nuclear accident. Ooh. And an unexpected old friend shows up, and hilarity ensues. Yeah.
So you saw it in New York,
I
obviously.
Did. Yes. I was most impressed.
I feel excellent. Like you were on right after you... Were you on the air on the show right after you saw it?
David's on all the time.
I probably was, actually.
We let him out from the cabinet behind.
Yes.
Okay, so best musical, Ben Brantley says The Band's Visit will win and should win. Sorry. And Jesse Green says agrees. So I won't have to repeat it. Says the same thing. Jesse Green, you'll find this interesting, thinks that Springsteen on Broadway should have been nominated for Best Musical.
Yeah, I know.
And I say that just to wind her.
I know. I saw that and I was like, be quiet, Jesse Green.
Best Play Revival, Angels in America will win and should win, according to Mr. Brantley. And Best Play Revival, according to Jesse Green, will win Angels in America, but Three Tall Women should win. That's so much good buzz about Three Tall Women.
Yeah, both of them.
And
they extended Angels again for like another 3 weeks.
Oh yeah, it's gonna run.
Yeah,
it's gonna run, and it should. It's a best musical revival. Carousel is gonna win and should win according to Ben Brantley, I like this. He thinks that Jerry Springer, the opera, should have been nominated.
I saw that and I giggled.
People love that.
Yeah, and I was about to say people really like it.
And then Best Musical Revival, according to Jesse Green, he said Once on This Island will win and My Fair Lady should win. So there's some contention in the ranks of the New York Times critics.
Dun, dun, dun.
And then I do recommend folks to read this. This is called Loving and Hating the Broadway Season. Our critics could have argued all night. It's a 15-page interview with both Jesse Green and Ben Brantley. I'm going to give us some, and it was the interview was with, what's his name? Scott Heller, who is the theater editor. the first question he had is, if we look at Broadway as our national theater, are we coming close to a balanced diet, or are we feeding the audience more than enough high-calorie dessert? Jesse Green said, if Broadway is our national theater, we're in trouble.
I was laughing when I read this.
Yeah,
this made me giggle really hard.
We only had 33 shows this season, which normally it's around 40 to 45. So it was really not a great season in terms of numbers. And there's just been this dearth of things like SpongeBob and Harry Potter and the Cursed Child and things that are using the franchise of other things. And I thought it was really interesting. They talk about here about how The Band's Visit was also written from a movie. But it's a movie that nobody has seen. And for instance, just we'll take our own scientific.
I would think the director would beg to differ with you on that.
How many people here have seen the movie, the Israeli movie, The Band's Visit?
I knew the movie.
Okay. Have you seen it?
Yes, I had seen the movie. I saw it as well, but
I saw it after The Band's Visit opened, and I needed to see what this movie was all about. But if I were watching the movie, I would like, and somebody was with me, and the movie was over, and they looked at me and said, hey, that's going to make a great musical. I would go, no, you're out of your mind. It does, there's no clue. But,
no.
But it's going to win, and it's completely different than a lot of the other things. So here's what Jesse Green said about SpongeBob. I was in awe of its cleverness and theatricality, but I cannot endorse the application of so much intelligence to such an empty story and silly characters. I know, call me Father Grumpo, but this is what I mean by a branding problem. Tina Landau and her designers did a brilliant job, but I'd rather see them given the same big-time resources to apply that brilliance to something more important.
Yes, he just doesn't like SpongeBob in the first place.
Well,
You know, if you don't like or get SpongeBob, I don't think you're going to get SpongeBob the musical. It doesn't matter if David Bowie and Cyndi Lauper are writing the music. If you're
what he goes on to talk about, which I think is kind of interesting, when you talk about things like The Lion King, which, by the way, is 20 years old now. Crazy.
I know.
The Lion King, and then they set up another one as an example, but they took this Disney franchise and they gave Julie Taymor carte blanche to use her creativity to change it up. These current franchises aren't given, these directors aren't given that kind of, or they seemingly aren't given that
kind
of.
It's hard to compare The Lion King, which is like sugar and spice, compared to SpongeBob.
Well, Frozen as well.
Yeah, I know. SpongeBob is naughty. Like, I don't know. They're apples and oranges. It's
You're
not
clearly
a cute little
a SpongeBob
cartoon.
Fan.
I love SpongeBob. I really, really do. He's naughty I love
how
him.
How do other people feel about SpongeBob?
I love him.
Yes, see? He's not a normal
cartoon.
Okay,
let's see how other people feel about SpongeBob.
But Brian likes him.
I know.
Okay.
We got yours. Now we have Brian's. Anybody else have an opinion on SpongeBob?
I've never seen it, but visually it just kind of grosses me out. So
I feel the same way. It's gross to look at. It's like Ren and Stimpy gross.
If you have grandchildren, it's wonderful until you see it 10 times in a row.
Oh, my. I also have never seen it. Hold on. I think there was one other Tony-y kind of thing I wanted to talk about. No, evidently not. The dry cleaners. This is a great story.
Oh, my gosh. I love
Did anybody else read this story about
this
the dry
cleaners? This is exciting.
Cleaner winning a Tony Award?
Tell.
Yes.
I have to find the article. Well, they're the
dry cleaners to Broadway.
The dry cleaners to mm-hmm. Broadway.
For like almost 100 years, like 86 years or
1934. So.
A good amount of years. A long time. Yeah, it's a long, long time.
I'm gonna find the darn thing.
I was laughing because I was like, think about it. You go into your dry cleaners, and there's the Tony.
So this is
up on the wall.
This
display.
Is
a show called The Dry Cleaners. No, it's no, you the need actual to talk into dry the microphone. Cleaners.
I thought it was a show called The Dry Cleaners.
No, the actual dry cleaners to Broadway, two shows that
I
dry
clean. I want to see a dry cleaner show now, though.
Well, I think it should. So there. So this is a Bronx dry cleaner called the Ernst Windsor's Cleaners. In the Bronx, they're going to get the Excellence in Theater Award, and they basically dry clean all of the Broadway costumes. So mm-hmm. Sunday night after the show, the trucks come in after midnight, and they sit and clean all the ones, but they also do the emergency things when something happens. And there's some stories in here about, I forgot, some of the things that they had seen as an emergency. They'll come in and they'll pick up the piece of, you know, after the matinee and have it ready for the evening performance. Nice. So they are...
That is pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool.
Again, I'd like going to my dry cleaners and seeing the Tony displayed up there. That's exciting.
Yes. So just a little bit, just this is for you.
Oh. Yep. I saw we had some crime, and I was hoping we were going to get
it's
a little bit of
it. It's sad crime. I'm not crazy. This is not. I did the sound effect, but it's really not all that fun.
No, the sound effect's fun.
So, you know, Ruthie Ann Miles and another woman were walking their children on a Brooklyn crosswalk, and they were hit by a car. Both of the children died, and the woman that hit them had a seizure.
She's pregnant, too, Ruthie.
Right, but the pregnant, not Ruthie Ann Miles wasn't pregnant. The other one is, the other woman is pregnant, I think. Anyway,
I don't know.
But Dorothy Bronze is the woman that hit them. She's a 44-year-old woman. She had a seizure. She's evidently prone to seizures.
Like
she's being arrested
seizures.
On manslaughter and other charges. And it's sort of a weird, you know, she was, most people are angry because she shouldn't be behind the wheel. But it's just a really sad story. But she has been arrested and charged.
She had just been, part of why they were saying people were really angry too is she was just recently treated in succession days ahead of time for multiple other
right.
seizures.
And
so
they
it
told
wasn't
her not to drive. They're like, you should not be driving.
Yeah. So it wasn't like, oh, she has a few seizures and she got behind the wheel. Like this. Yeah. Yeah.
And Jenny, you are right. It was Ruthie Ann Miles. I forgot her. She's Ruthie Blumenstein. And Ruthie Ann Miles is her stage name. Mm-hmm. So they kept talking about Blumenstein having, but the child, her child in utero is fine or better or safe.
Still alive.
Still viable.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever the word is. Anyway, so that was kind of sad. And now I've lost, we'll just go here. There, you'll like this one too. And you probably already, I'm sure you already knew about this. The all-female concert version of Jesus Christ
Jesus
Superstar.
Oh, Jesus Christ Superstar. Mm-hmm. Well, yes, it's Superstar, so.
Well, I know.
I do love me some Superstar.
Well, they
I find this interesting.
They have, they're going to make a record album. You know, that's what we called them back in the day, record albums. They're going to make a record album, and she didn't sing it in the concert version, but Cynthia Erivo is going to sing Mary Magdalene.
Yeah, that's kind of awesome.
Isn't that cool?
Sauce.
It is, and let's see. Uh-oh. Where's my other pages?
I can't remember everyone offhand, but I got very excited because...
Well, you love your Cynthia Erivo.
I love my Cynthia Erivo. Well, I mean, come on. She can sing. And she
so
can sing.
And so many people on Broadway can't.
No, I know. But she can like, woo! So I don't know. I think it'll be interesting. Yeah. It'll be awesome. So the music is so good in that show.
Shoshana Bean is going to be playing Judas. Morgan James played Jesus Christ before. Anne Harada and Debbie Gravite, who I don't know, are signing on, along with Ellen Marie Marsh, Jasmine Walker, Brianna Marie Parham, Isabel Santiago, Tamika Sonia Lawrence, Eden Espinoza, and Pearl Sun, which coincidentally was my sorority name in college.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
That's exciting.
Yep. Children of a Lesser God is closing early.
I saw that.
Yeah, a couple weeks early. That's
I'm not surprised, though, from the notices and
yeah. Okay, buzz. Listen, in our last 5 minutes, who here watches Rise? Nobody?
No.
Is anybody not familiar with Rise? Do y'all know what it is?
No.
Yeah.
Okay, so Yeah. Cullum, raising your hand and mouthing words doesn't work on the radio. Really doesn't.
But he smiled when he raised it. So
Rise is a current series, drama series, starring Josh Radnor and...
Rosie
Perez, who does an awesome job.
Yeah, she's kind of everything.
I like her a lot in this. Josh Radnor, not so much. Although I'm warming up to him, and I watched the first three episodes as a hate watch.
I couldn't get past the two, and I was like, but I just can't.
No,
I want
I'm,
to, but
I'm
I can't.
Fully ensconced and engaged in it now. When it's about a high school doing a production of Spring Awakening, and all the things that a small steel town in Pittsburgh might think about a production of Spring Awakening.
He also didn't tell anyone in the school or the teachers or the parents or anyone else that he was going to do this show, which is not really the best way in a small town to approach it.
Well, yeah. So anyway, the interesting thing in the news today was there is going to be a new song written not for Rise.
For Spring Awakening.
For Spring Awakening. Duncan Sheik and Steven Sater are going to write another song for both. It's going to premiere on Rise, on the finale of Rise, but it's going to be inserted into the book of Spring Awakening, and it's a duet between Melior and, what's her name? I'm terrible with names. What's the female lead?
Some girl's name. I'll come up with the name. The chick.
Wendella.
Wendella. There you go.
Wendella. And the little girl
exactly
playing.
Exactly on the tip of your tongue, right?
So, I was hoping that more people would have seen it and had a
opinion. I think it's really, really cool. I've seen the previews for it. It's made me go, I'll try to watch it on demand again. But I haven't yet. But I think it's really awesome.
Yeah.
There you go.
All right. Your homework is to go watch an episode in your spare time. Because
Rosie Perez is kind of awesome in it.
She does a great job.
Because she's kind of awesome.
On Memorial Day, Megan Hilty and Cynthia Erivo, once again, are going to perform at the National Memorial Day concert, which will be on television.
I love Cynthia. She's everywhere.
Megan Hilty will also be part of that. And others. Specifically,
I like Megan Hilty, but I mean, it's Cynthia Erivo, so.
Well, you can like them both.
I know.
That is
allowed. But it's all about Cynthia.
Okay. Hold on. I am like so out of. Hamilton the Exhibit. Have you heard about this?
I liked how you said Hamilton the Exhibit.
And I didn't print this out, evidently, because I don't see any paperwork. But they are. So I'm sort of mixed emotions about this. The capitalizing of Hamlet is sort of making
Hamlet?
Me a little... Hamlet, that too. Of Hamilton is kind of upsetting
kind
me.
Kind of a great change of...
They are, for such a production of the people, they have single-handedly driven up ticket prices with their premium ticket prices. They make it really difficult for people to get decent seats and face values. Tickets are in the $300 and $400 range for premium seats, which if you're buying from a reseller, there's a lot more than that. And then merch. And now they're opening an exhibit that's going to travel with one of the, I believe it's going to travel with one of the tours. Another way for Hamilton to make money. Anybody got thoughts on that one?
An exhibit of the history, or
it's like a museum exhibit. Oh,
okay.
Yeah, and had I printed out the thing, I would have read it before I got here. I just know there is one. There is a link on our site, offstageonair.com, and you can read it for yourself and call and tell me what it is. Something I've been meaning to talk about for the past 3 weeks, and I think I've never had time, and I think we have time right now. Both Nicole and I get a daily email called the Broadway Briefing. And that's what most people use to learn about what's going on. I listen to a podcast and about theater. It's a daily podcast. And I just discovered, since I started getting the Broadway Briefing, that all they do is reading that email to us, really, because it's got all the stuff. And everybody uses it. And Robert Ferris was mentioned in the Broadway Briefing a few weeks ago. He wrote a story about Greater Austin High School Musical Theater Awards, and Tyler Mount, who is an Austinite who's made it really big, who I have to admit I had never heard of before.
You've never saw his vlog or anything?
Well, I have now because I went and looked at it. I don't do the vloggy stuff. That's it. And then the last thing I'm going to talk about is Bathtubs Over Broadway, something else I've been meaning to talk about for years and years. Listeners to this show may have remembered that I made my career in a thing called industrial theater, or theater for business. And it's a industry that not a lot of people know about. There is a documentary that's traveling the country and the current film festival circuit called Bathtubs Over Broadway, and it is about my old industry, and it's fascinating. We used to do these big Broadway-style million-dollar musicals for industry, and that's how I made my living for almost 30 years. So look it up.
She's being kind. She was one of the pioneers of the industry.
I wasn't, actually, not according to this. They did it much sooner than I did, but I was relatively early in the industry.
She was. So she's just being quiet.
The last thing I should say that I didn't mention, that song that we played going in, which is called I'm gonna sit right down. That's not the song.
It was a great song, is what it was.
It was a great song.
From a cool musical.
It was called I'd Rather Be Me, from a little show that's nominated for Best Musical 2018 Tony Awards, called Mean Girls.
Yes.
And so I'm going to be playing at the start and end of the beginning sessions music from the nominated musicals. And so we will go out now listening to another song from Mean Girls called Apex Predatory.
Yes.
Predator? I don't know.
This anyway. Will probably win best song.
Pardon me? What? Okay, whatever said. Here we go. So let's listen to it. We'll come right back. At the watering hole, see the girls. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
We are missing our Nick Mayo today.
We're holding the mayo.
But in real life, he's purposely didn't come because Jenny Lavery is here.
Aw, boo.
We were talking before we were on the show. Jenny said, Nick Mayo is your co-host, and he's never been here when you've been here. So I think I would take it personally.
Or maybe they're the same person, like Superman, and she's just secret.
You are Nick Mayo.
Don't let my secret out.
That's sorry, definitely Nick. What it is.
Yeah. Okay, we've been talking to a lot of folks in the previous half hour, but we're going to talk to some specific folks here from Theater on Block and their show Cry It Out by Molly Smith Meltzer. We have the director. Metzler. You know what? It's in red on your poster and I can't see it. And I was like, I was squinting my eyes. It's Metzler. Thank you. Cause I called her Meltzer before and she'll probably call me. Anyway, we have here the director, Lily Wolf. Hi, Lily.
Hello.
We have the producer and artistic director of Theater on Block and one of the performers in the show, Jenny Lavery.
Hey.
Oh, and who also doubles as Nick Mayo.
Yes. Hey.
Other performers here, we have the incomparable Lee Eddy.
Oh, hi.
And the other incomparable Kristen Davis.
Oh, hello.
Oh, hello. Which was a Broadway show.
Yes, it was.
Hello.
Oh, hello.
Yeah. Wow. I have seen that.
That's too much tuna.
Show. Too much tuna.
It is available on
Broadway
HD or something. You can see it.
Yeah.
Have you seen the Netflix special also?
I don't think so.
It's really good.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, Netflix filmed it one night.
Oh, maybe that's what
I
saw.
It's the same thing.
Who was the guest?
The same thing.
Steve Martin.
Yes, I saw it.
Yeah, that was
that's the one I saw. So it's not Netflix. It's not Broadway HD. It's Netflix.
But I feel like it's been on Broadway HD too.
I'm sure it's been on
Broadway. Probably. Who knows? But you may.
So, but we're not here to talk about
that.
Actually, before we talk about this show, Lily, I asked you to choose a number between 2 and 54. What'd you choose?
I chose 17.
17. Let's see what it is. Hurry. That was the wrong thing. What happened?
That was
it was a terrible number.
Well, it was our opening theme music, so it wasn't the worst.
It was pretty bad
thing ever to happen.
Well, interestingly
enough, it was my one job.
Okay, here it is.
Hi, I'm David Lee Strasberg, creative director of the Lee Strasberg Theater and Film Institute, and you are listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP Hornsby, Austin.
Okay, can you do it once more with feeling?
If you want.
I told Lee Strasberg's son to do it once more with feeling.
Oh, yeah, my God.
That's what you get here in Austin. We're hard-hitting journalists here.
Dun,
so,
dun, dun.
Jenny, tell us about this show.
Oh.
Sorry. That was a great, professional segue.
Yeah. Cry It Out is a play that premiered at Humana a few years ago by Molly Smith Metzler, who also writes for Shameless and Orange is the New Black.
Oh.
And Reese Witherspoon's new company. And it is a play all about female friendship and motherhood and parenting. And it's something that when I read the script, Lily had seen it at Humana and brought it to me. It's something that I'd never seen on stage before. And mm-hmm. was such an honest and authentic conversation presenting all these different viewpoints on parenting.
So Lily is the one that brought this to you.
Yeah.
Talk about that. What about this particular piece said this is going to be right for the Austin audience?
Yeah. So I think the Austin audience is very, very smart and like sense try to ask questions that feel in some way unanswerable and really kind of like wrestle with those questions. And that's how I felt about this play, that it was asking a question that I both personally had no answer to, but I think that as a society, we also have no good answer to. So that's what intrigued me about it. I also saw it with my best friend at the time, and by the time the play was over, we were both just like clinging to each other because I think we had never experienced, we go to Humana together every year, and we had never seen a show there or anywhere else that just put female friendship right at the center of the narrative. There was no romantic relationship. It was just like two women and the importance of their relationship with each other. And that was so new. I think that's probably part of the new that Jenny is talking about.
So this show would pass the Bechdel test then?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes.
I'm assuming, do the characters have names? Because that's part of it.
Beautiful Lena.
And Lee Eddy, what part are you playing?
The beautiful Lena.
Tell us about beautiful Lena.
Lena is from South Shore, Long Beach, and she is loud and salty and all about the ocean.
So this is a stretch for you.
Yeah, yeah. I had to do a lot of research for this, the loud part and the salty part. Just basically, she is living with her mother-in-law in a house that is behind Jenny's character's house, and she has a new child and is on maternity leave at the point of the play start, and has to go back to work in a couple of weeks. And the struggle of not wanting to go back to work in a couple of weeks, but not being able to afford to, A, not have an income, and B, even scraping by trying to get childcare mm-hmm. to cover while she is at work.
Awesome. So, and Kristen, who do you play?
I play Adrian, who lives in a different part of the neighborhood, who is also a new mom, who has been trying to become a mother for a long time and just recently succeeded, and is also at a crucial moment in her own professional career and is smashed up between what everyone thinks is a good momhood versus what she's wanting out of her career. And she feels very isolated, mostly because everyone else seems to be putting all of these ideas of what it is to be a good mother onto her. And she's losing her voice in that.
Awesome. And Jenny, who do you play?
I play Jessie. She has been a successful corporate lawyer in Manhattan for many years and is married to a successful guy as well. They decide to move out to Long Island when they have the baby. And she now, after having her child, is struggling to figure out whether she wants to go back to work and what her identity is now, having gone through a pretty tough labor. And so there's the play also talks about the friendship across class differences as well.
So, I was going to ask about that because we're talking about Long Island, mm-hmm. and I'm looking at the radio audience can't see it, but three white human beings, mm-hmm. And so I was wondering if it dealt at all with race and class. Mm-hmm. Specifically, I'm assuming class.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's it takes place in Port Washington, which is a part of Long Island that has Section 8 housing smashed right up with Sands Point, which is where the Great Gatsby, the egg, was modeled mm-hmm. after. It's where a lot of the Yankees live. So there is, in Port Washington, there are these major class conflicts within the city.
It's interesting to see. I mean, if you go out to Long Island, if you spend it, you can see that. You'll be out in Quahog and then just in the neighborhoods that are not quite as close to the water are like Section 8 housing and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And there is one more character in the show, is there not?
Mm-hmm. There is, there is. Adrian's husband is also featured in the show. And he is experiencing his own journey through parenthood and figuring out what he wants and trying to navigate his marriage, his relationship with his wife, his relationship with his daughter, his career. And is also, you know, like I think probably everyone, very lonely in that journey.
And that's played by Ben Wolf, correct?
Correct.
Awesome. But you guys have a scene that you're ready to do, yes?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you don't have to. So does it need to be set up at all?
No, I don't think so, other than you could know that this is the very first kind of coffee date or prearranged coffee date meeting between Jesse and Lena, and they're navigating topics of conversation.
Okay, great. So this is Jenny Lavery, Lee Eddy, and Kristen Davis doing a scene from Theater on Block's production of Cry It Out by Molly Smith Metzler.
So are you planning to sleep train Max?
Is that thing where you let him cry it out?
Yes.
No, I am not doing that crap. Why are you?
We might. I mean, I don't know yet. We're still discussing.
You know you, girl. No judgment here. I'm just not into crying out myself.
Why not? I mean, may I ask?
Sure. Because I don't hate babies. I'm sorry, it's true. That's what sleep training is. It's barbaric. What, you lay a baby down in a dark crib and let him scream and scream until he learns no one is coming for him? What are we, Vikings? We're going to put on the Viking helmets and club him too?
Wow, you have strong feelings
I
about
think you're supposed to cry when you're left all alone in a dark room. That's what I think. And I think your mom or your dad or someone who loves you is supposed to come and get you.
I know, you're right. You are right. I just wish... our doctor said that.
Is your doctor a woman or a man?
Man.
Then he can shut the hell up right now. Yeah. This is our rodeo. The women are in charge, and the women know what to do.
Yeah, we do.
And see. Oh, and see. Well, I was just enwrapped. Oh, my God. Lee Eddy, you just sort of came out of nowhere with that accent. I'm going, wow. I met women like you.
Yeah.
I started to get scared. I did that clamor up in the subway kind of feel, like I'm just going to read my newspaper.
Good, so it came through.
It did.
Awesome.
What fun. So So what else about this piece, what other than the takeaway about female friendship, what else are our audiences going to walk away with?
Mm-hmm. Well, we actually had a very young audience on Sunday night of students from the BFA acting program at UT. Shout out, woohoo! and I was really interested to see how that was going to go, because our opening night it was a lot of moms who had kind of come together in groups and who were obviously connecting with the material. But the kids, they all stayed for the talk back afterwards, and they all shared that they had finished the show and sort of independently texted their mothers and just said, like, oh my gosh, I get it. I get what you were going through. Thank you. And so I think to really like shine a light on that relationship and to bring a new level of appreciation, you know, between families for just like the humanity of the experience of trying to raise a kid, that was really exciting and encouraging to me.
Awesome.
That is cool.
Well, we are just about out of time. You opened last week.
We did.
And how long do you play?
For the next 2 weeks. And we have a sort of odd schedule, so we have performances Thursday through Monday of this week, and then next weekend Wednesday through Sunday.
Okay, and you're playing at the Wizen Hut.
Wizen Hut.
The Wizen Hut at Zach. I always yes. mispronounce the Wizen Hut and the Clayburg. And you close on the 20th, is that right?
We do.
Where can folks go to get more information?
TheaterOnBlock.org.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for showing up and coming
thank
on the show.
Thank you for listening. Yes.
And hopefully some of you will stick around and join us backstage.
Cool.
We would love that. So that was Jenny Lavery, Lily Wolf, Lee Eddy, and Kristen Davis of Theater on Block's production of Cry It Out by Molly Smith Metzler at the Zach Theater on the Wizen Hut stage through May 20th. For more information, theateronblock.org. And that's theater with an R-E and B-L-O-C without the K. We will be right back. Okay, totally want to see that show.
Yeah.
Totally want to see that show.
I agree.
You guys can't see the show because you're going to be doing other shows.
Oh, we can.
Oh, you can. Oh, that's right. Monday.
Yeah, which is when we're on.
Monday.
So you will get an opportunity.
Thank you, Theater on Block.
So locally, I just wanted to talk about a couple of things. I was fortunate enough to go to Performance Park last week. Has anybody experienced Performance Park over at the Vortex?
No.
No.
Not yet. Not yet.
Well, you've got 2 more weeks to do it. So like, Performance Park has taken over the entire Vortex compound. And it is experiential in the way I like Sleep No More. You do wear a mask and you go through the compound and you discover, you talk to characters, you play games. And so you can be as engaged or as not engaged as you want, but it's quite fun. I went there with former co-op person, Jen Venske, and we just had a lovely time. I had my crutches, so they all felt sorry for me. Which is what I was going for. That's why I won the game. But it was quite fun. And the Vortex, if you haven't been to the Vortex, it's worth seeing just because they've got a great situation with a whole... They have a compound, and it's called a compound. They have a food truck that's permanently there, Patrizzi's, and it's quite fun. There's lots of stuff to do there.
The images from it look spectacular.
Yeah, they do some fun stuff. And when I was listening to Nick and...
Michael,
they had Performance Park on as a guest, and I did not realize that one of the characters that my favorite character out there to talk to was the incomparable Melissa Vogt.
Yeah.
And I did not know it was her.
Oh, that's kind of funny.
So that's
you learned something listening to the show.
I did.
See what if other listeners learned too.
So that was good. And the only other thing I want to talk about, unless you have something else.
No, my Performance Park. I was excited about that again. I like seeing the big billboard on airport.
It's great.
It's cool. Really kind of awesome.
That's actually groundbreaking for theater in that market. Mm-hmm. Like, we haven't seen billboards like that. Other than for things at the Long Center or Bass or at Zach. So it's nice that the Vortex is having that kind of visibility.
I agree.
All for it. The Secret of Soap and Spin by Pollyanna Theater Company. Now you'd like this because you love it when we talk about the little
kiddos. I do, the peanuts.
But I saw Judy Modish Campbell last night at a meeting and it made me think I really need to talk about Pollyanna again. But they are... they're doing a show over at the Long Center in the Rollins Stage on May 12th through 19th called, Secret of Soap and Spin. Mm-hmm. And they deal, they always deal with issues that are going on, and they're dealing with the opiate crisis.
Yeah, this one was cool. There was a really cool story in The Statesman the other day on this show.
Yep. So you can get more information at polytheater.org. You have anything, or anybody else have anything locally other than your own show you want to talk about?
No, you're like...
And we just want to talk about our own show.
I know you do. Took it half the wait, David Jarrett. All right.
Been waiting.
Well, let's do Today in Theater History.
Today
in theater
history.
Today in theater history.
What happened?
2 years before I was born, you guys can figure out the year, 2014. 1956. I'm just going to read this because I've never heard of this, but I just like the description. In the house by the lake... That's the name of the show, but it's also the beginning of this sentence. In the house by the lake lives a woman who was saved from suicide by her husband years before, through hypnosis. He now plans to bring her to commit the act again using hypnosis.
Oh. Who is in it?
Don't know.
They don't tell you?
Don't know, but it was done in London. It played 928 performances at the Duke of York, and it was written by Hugh Mills.
It sounds spooky.
It does sound spooky. And I've decided I really like psychological thrillers.
Yeah. Oh, I agree with you.
Gaslight.
Yeah.
Gaslight was one of the first straight plays I saw. That's a lie, but I'll just say that.
The original production?
No. 1978, Ain't Misbehavin' opened at the Longacre Theater, starring one Nell Carter, Ken Page, and Charlene Woodward, and also somebody named Andre DeShields. And that's just a wonderful, wonderful show. It won the Tony for Best Musical, and it ran for 1,600 performances.
It had a long run.
Let's see. The 9th of May, which today is, was also the opening of Nine in 1982. Directed by Tommy Toon, starred Raul Julia with Karen Akers, Anita Morris, and Lillian Montevecchi.
We love Lillian.
Who's been a guest on this show.
She played Lillian Lefleur.
And of course, the musical was inspired by Eight and a Half by Federico Fellini. This was also the opening.
I love that musical, Moriarty. Man, that's just a great show.
It was
It's exciting.
Okay, it was also the opening of Passion, Stephen Sondheim's Jane Gillespie musical. Ran only 280 performances, but won the Tony for Best Musical.
Music in it is pretty spectacular. I like some of the music in it, but I can't sit through the show.
It's
I know.
Hard. This I didn't know. In 2005, the Royale and the Plymouth Theater are renamed. Can anybody?
What year was that?
2005. You know what the Royale and the Plymouth were renamed to?
Lisa Sheps.
They're people. They're Schuberts. Mm-hmm. I actually met both of these people. Is the Schoenfeld and the Bernie Jacobs.
Oh.
Those were the other one.
This is the anniversary of the death of Lena Horne.
Oh.
And then finally for birthdays, we have Alan Bennett, 1934. He wrote the show that closed my old play theater. And he also wrote History Boys, among other things. Albert Finney, Glenda Jackson, soon to be Tony Award winner. Candace Bergen and Christopher Shin. Also locally, Jessica O'Brien and Rachel James. So
happy birthday.
Bon anniversaire.
Bon anniversaire.
As we say. So we're going to take a little break. We're going to listen to a little bit of Ain't Misbehavin'. We're going to come back and talk to the folks, the good folks at Jarrett Productions.
Ooh.
We'll be back. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
Hello.
It's Nicole.
We just got finished talking to Jenny Lavery, Lily Wolf, Lee Eddy, and Kristen Davis. And now we're going to switch gears and we're going to talk to the good old folks at Jarrett Productions and their show Seminar by Teresa Rebeck, who up until today I always thought was pronounced Rybeck. Really? I don't know. Oh, because I know an Alex Rybeck. That's why. Okay. The music director that worked with one Stuart Moulton. Here we have boy producer, David Jarrett.
That's me.
How are you, David?
Boy good, producer. Thank you.
I love it.
Boy director, Brian Bradford.
Hello.
We have Sarah Zarang. God, dog it. You made it worse. Hi.
Hello.
And Cullen Morgan.
Hello.
Hi. Yeah, so David graciously gave me the pronunciation that rhymes with meringue, and now I just want to say meringue.
It's
I also, there's a lovely stage manager here in town who I work with called Kelsey Meringi.
Oh, that is
spelled in a... Similarly, so my mind is
maybe going
crazy.
We'll have to get her and Sarah together.
You should. Meringi and Zaring. Except you'd have to change it to Zaringi. If you wouldn't mind.
You could just write a whole song about it.
I also gave them the pronunciation of this radio station.
Yes,
oh, good.
He did.
And how did you type that?
I said co-op. As in cooperative, as opposed to coop, as
coop.
In chicken.
Yep. Good. Most people, many people call us coop. So, David, tell us about the show and why you chose it for this time and in this place.
I saw this show in 2012, which was a seminal moment in theater for me. This preceded the creation of Jarrett Productions, but it was part of what led to the creation of Jarrett Productions, because that was the same trip to New York during which I saw Freud's Last Session.
I was about to say, yeah. I remember that.
And I saw Teresa Rebeck's Seminar on Broadway at that same time. And I knew I was predisposed to like both of those plays before I saw them, because I'd read about them and read reviews. And then once we did establish Jarrett Productions, I kept coming back to this play thinking, I really, really, really want to do this at some point, and that some point just happens to be right now, as in we open tomorrow.
Yes, you do.
And I'll let Brian tell you a little bit more about the play, but most of the plays that all of the plays that we've done deal in one way or another with relationships, whether it's family relationships or relationships that are like families, and how the relationships change and the dynamics of the interactions. And this one is no different than that. There are people that don't really know each other very well in this play, characters.
Right.
And there are relationships that develop and change, and the dynamics change over the period of time. And I think it's very exciting. It's a very funny play. People have been saying, when are you going to do a comedy? And I've said, all these other plays that made you cry had some funny moments, didn't they? So this is the comedy you've been asking for, folks.
Okay, so Brian, tell us what the show is.
The show is about four writers who are taking a seminar, a private seminar from an international literary figure, who I compare to Simon Cowell in...
Oh, interesting.
And how he critiques their work. And the play, have y'all seen the play?
Have not. Have not. I read the review when it opened and when David went to see it.
It's very interesting in that Teresa Rebeck wrote it, but her handling of the misogyny in the show, she's been taken to task for in many reviews that I read. But, you know, this play is... it's what I like about plays like this, in that they talk about ideas. You come out of the theater hopefully talking about the ideas that it brought up. And there's a lot of feminism, misogyny, what is art and who gets to decide what is good or not. And there's about sex and power and who's using whom to get what they want. And so there's a lot of ideas in the play. But
That's why it's a comedy.
Yeah, I know. It doesn't sound like it.
Are the writers, the characters that are the writers that visit this, are they all writing from the same genre? Is it the same genre of writing, or does it come from all...
Fiction writing, yeah.
Fiction
writers.
Okay, it's like the story of my life.
Yeah. Or just about anybody in theater.
Sarah, what do you play?
I play Kate. She, her apartment is where the seminar is taking place.
Of course.
Yes, she is a rich... she describes herself as a rich white girl living in New York, and she and Leonard aren't the best of friends. Leonard is the...
That's me.
Yes, yeah, he's the, what do you call it, director of the seminar.
The teacher. The awesome teacher.
I have to separate you two?
Yes.
With a crowbar.
I love this character. I loved her immediately. My cast was saying last night that they did not like her when they read it, and I just thought that was crazy. I love this character.
Oh my! So, yes. And Cullum, you're playing the teacher.
I play Leonard. Yes, mm-hmm. I am.
Can we call you Lenny?
Well, no.
No, he wouldn't.
Not at all. No.
That's what I thought.
I have to go by the full name.
Okay, Leonard.
It has power in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's good. He's an international renowned. He has a lot of great ideas. He can see into people. He can tell you exactly what you need to improve. And, you know, the truth is hard to hear sometimes. So a lot of babies in this show. And and I get to take them to task on it. It's a
I
lot
think he's
fun.
Becoming this character.
I was just about really to say, is a little bit of Leonard right now? Yeah. Or wait a minute.
Yeah, you get to play people you don't normally play in life. So that's what I love about this. This is fun.
That's a good thing about the acting. David Jarrett, who do you play?
I don't.
You're not in it.
No.
Wait, hold on.
This is another thing the audience has been...
This is
big news, David Jarrett.
This is another thing the audience has been asking for, me to not be in the show.
And, I doubt that, but this is probably the first Jarrett production show that you're not in. Is that true?
It is. This is number 6, and this is number 1 for me not being in it.
Because I believe, I'm going to just go on and say this, I believe I had you, I forgot what the very, very first show you did, but you came in here and you said, I wanted to create a production company so I could do this show.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
no bones about it.
Wow. Okay. Well, good. Yeah. Then we're going to stop talking to you.
Okay.
what other characters are, what are the other characters?
Ryan did that months ago.
there's three other, two male writers and another female writer. Mm-hmm.
So as we know, a story and a theater piece, the time that it happens, it's always the time that something happens. So what happens here that is worth telling the story?
Say that again. Rephrase. Alex, can you rephrase the question?
Whenever there's a story about a time in life, it means something's happened. So there's an action of the story and conflict, usually in theater. So I'm just curious as to what is it that happens during this seminar that makes it worthy of our audience's attention?
Well, I don't know if I don't know how relevant this play was in 2008 when it was done, mm-hmm. but right now with the Time's Up movement and all of that, it's become a very relevant play in the issues that are discussed in it. So, I mean, I don't know what happens in the play
Okay, so I totally valid. It's not an action driven play.
Let's do a seminar and watch the.
So we're gonna hear a little bit.
Yeah.
So do we need to set this up? Somebody want to set it up?
This is the first interaction between Kate, who has presented her story to Leonard, and this is the first time we really get to see what Leonard's about.
Okay. This is Sarah Zerang and Cullum Morgan doing a scene from Jarrett Productions' production of Seminar by Teresa Rebeck.
So what are we talking about?
The first sentence.
Oh, yeah, Christ, I remember now. Oh, Christ. When truth is acknowledged universally, it is also universally disdained. I mean, what?
That's not the whole sentence.
Yeah, I see that. I see the semicolon. I understand that that means that there's only a partial stop and that more is coming, but I'm not sure I want to continue, okay? I'm not even making it through your first sentence, so why don't you tell me what you're doing, because it's not exactly drawing me in here.
What am I...
Yes, what are you doing?
It's a referencing of Jane Austen. The first sentence of Pride and Prejudice. It's kind of a sardonic commentary.
What's so sardonic about it?
Well, it's the narrator.
I don't care about the narrator. If I can't get past the first five words, how am I supposed to find out enough about the narrator to care about him?
Well, it's not a him, it's a her.
Well, see, that would be my point. If I can't even tell what gender your narrator is, you haven't really done your job now, have you?
How? I mean, if you don't go past the first five words, how...
Listen to me. Don't defend yourself. If you're defending yourself, you're not listening. I do know who the narrator is. She's an overeducated, completely inexperienced, sexually inadequate girl who has rich parents who give her everything and who has nothing to say, so she sits around and thinks about Jane Austen all the time. I don't care about that person. This is what I'm trying to say. I don't have to go past the first five words because I already know enough and I don't care.
Wow. I hate you, Leonard. Hashtag me too. Unfortunately, we are plumb out of time. You open tomorrow.
We open tomorrow.
At Trinity Street Theater.
Trinity Street Theater.
Where can folks go to get more information?
Our website is www.jarrettproductions.com.
Well, break a leg tomorrow. I hope y'all can stick around, or some of you can stick around for backstage. Best of luck. I'll be seeing it.
Thank you very much.
We're watching you, Leonard. Boy, I can't tell you what that brought up. So that was David Jarrett, Brian Bradford, Sarah Meringue. Dong it!
The meringue.
Sarah Zerang, Cullen Morgan, with Jarrett Productions, production of Seminar by Teresa Rebeck. It's playing at the Trinity Street Theater from May 10th through June 3rd. For more information, you may visit jarrettproductions.com. And we just have time to say goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Take care.
We'll see you next week.
Everybody have a good one. Oh, darn it. I wanted to have time. My mother died in 2011. On this day, and so
my father sure died 3 years ago today. We share that anniversary.
We share that. Well, here, this is for our parents.
World's best mom.
All of life is a lesson.
She may not know what to say.
We'll be spending the day.
Well, the curtain has just come down on Sophie the Musical, the story of a blind dog searching for love in the big city of Toulouse-Lautrec. Something. I don't know where I was going.
It's like, I don't know where so
I always start these things out strong and then I can't
do
it.
Is that
and
a real thing?
The Latrice
Sophie
the blind dog is her real dog.
Oh, Sophie the blind dog is my dog.
But is she blind?
She is. Actually, she has no eyes.
Whoa, oh,
she's just got two eyes.
Tyler might really remove
them. No, I have a dog who's 18.
So do I.
Yeah. Mine is blind.
And she has no teeth.
And no teeth, yeah.
She does have teeth, but she's starting to go into I said she sounds like Don Piano from Sesame Street that always bangs his head because I just hear this boom, boom.
Oh, I know. They're little skulls. I asked the vet. I was like, how do they not have concussions?
Yeah.
This is okay?
I'm so glad I'm not alone on that one.
Do you have doggy helmets? Like, what?
They do have, and I know we're not here to talk about dogs, but there is a YouTube, when Sophie went blind, people kept sending me this YouTube of this helmety thing that they put on the dog that has little, like, stretchy things, and they show this dog like a Jack Russell Terrier, that kind of energy, bouncing on the walls.
Oh my gosh.
It's funny. Sophie moves very slow.
Is that our amusement or is it really helping the dog?
It does not help the dog at all.
It's right. Awful.
Well, let's take a moment to discuss that we are here backstage. We've left the backstage area. We're downstairs next to the dumpsters. Some of us are sitting here with our feet in puddles of unnamed liquid. Others have avoided the puddles.
Very vivid.
And we have here from the show from earlier, Jenny Lavery was brave enough to be here, as well as Kristen Davis.
Hi.
And of course, the incomparable Nicole Shiro is here as well.
No, stop.
So So Jenny, you've been backstage before, but I don't know that have you been backstage when I've been here?
Yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. That's
the
what
secretary.
I
was just I
think it was recently with the secretary.
And let me say this, that I so enjoyed the secretary. And you know, Theater on Block, you know, we say that we're really not going to talk about your shows, your company, but I have to say, Theater on Block does such incredible work. Almost you know, I'm a pretty hard critic.
Yeah.
And I've liked most everything I've seen that you did. And the secretary was just top notch. The performances in there, of course, you've heard this a million times, are just amazing.
Yeah.
All the way through.
Thanks.
You pick cool pieces and you cast great people. So you put that together and you're off to a good start.
It's the year of the Lavery.
Woo! I feel like the past many years have been. The past handful have been the year of the Lavery.
Yeah.
You guys.
She's been working it.
You guys. Now, the secretary was one of those shows that we hope that it's going to have a big trajectory ahead.
It should have legs.
It started a lot of conversation, which is, I know what you really wanted, which is kind of awesome sauce.
I would love to see the script worked on a little bit, mm-hmm. But the skeleton is definitely there.
Yeah, it's there. It's there. It's actually on the desk of some big people. So hopefully there is mobility for the show. Maybe even the production. But either way, Kyle and I are going to team up and start development on a new script.
Yeah. Woo! Can you say anything about it?
I can. There has been news from China that by 2025 everybody will be given a social score. This sounds
in China.
Yes, this sounds like a Black Mirror episode.
Yes, sure does.
But it's all based on trust, mm-hmm. and there are major repercussions. So they're using
what could possibly be a repercussion from that?
Yeah, I know, right? What could go wrong?
So there are surveillance cameras that they want to even go inside the houses. Right now, they have good enough surveillance cameras that even on the streets, they can identify anybody's car anywhere. Yada yada yada. But so their trust is now the new currency, and you won't be able to fly or get a house or whatever. It's like a credit score.
Interesting thought, if that were to. It sounds sort of conspiracy theory to me, but I mean, in theory, that could never fly here. But give us a couple more years under the current administration, and we might be able to be there.
Right? So we're loosely basing a horror story off of something like that.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. It's crazy over there. But not only them, other Asian countries are now taking, even Japan recently changed their law. When you go in, they take a photo of you and your fingerprint before you go into the country. It's kind of wackadoodle.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, to think that they don't take a photo of you when you enter this country, you're being very naive.
I wasn't.
You don't get to pose for it.
Yeah, they get happening. Your bad side.
No, so Kristen Davis, I got on and where I went.
Yeah.
Kristen Davis, tell me what your story is. Where are you from?
Oh, I grew up in Dallas.
Texas or the other one?
The only one I know of is here in Texas.
The Big B. Mm-hmm.
You grew up in Dallas.
I grew up in Dallas. I went to college in Houston and then was in San Francisco and New York before coming back to Texas.
Did you go to U of H?
I went to Rice.
Rice. You know, my father went to Rice.
Really?
And my family had a store right over there in the Village. You know the Kinko's?
Of course.
That was our store.
Oh, my gosh.
But I had never been on the campus of Rice till...
a lot of history on that campus.
It's beautiful.
Yeah,
it's gorgeous.
Do they have a theater department there?
So they do now. When I was there, there was a department in the sense of, you know, classes and activity, but there wasn't a major. So I studied English, but ran a theater company, which is... Okay, I could be wrong, but it's...
You're never wrong.
It isn't. If it's not the oldest, it's one of the oldest student-led theater companies in the country.
Wow.
I don't know if, like, how factual that is, but it's like the Rice Players. They've been around for a really, really long time. So I also had was there at the same time as a great teacher and director, Mark Ramont, who went to UT a while back. And so had a great theater education. Most of it was hands-on. But then went to grad school afterwards when I decided I wanted to act professionally.
Did you do theater in Dallas?
I did not. Did I ever?
Well, I don't know. You would be the one be able to answer that.
No, I did. Okay. I worked with Mildred's Umbrella in Houston after I graduated.
Woo-hoo. So what was that? Where did that switch get turned for you that you wanted to?
I was just sitting here going, when did that change?
I can tell you exactly when. When I went to college, I didn't know really what I wanted to do. I think I thought I was going to be a high school English teacher. And it was my junior year. I was doing a production of the Baltimore Waltz, and my castmate and I were sitting like studying late at the coffee house, and he said something like, "Well, are you gonna like do this?" And I said, "What do you mean?" He's like, "You know, like do this for your life and your job." And I was like, "Oh, is that something people do?" And he said, "Yes, and you should." And so that I had never even really thought of it. I don't think I had thought of it before. And so after that, I studied abroad in London for half a year and had some really great teachers and some more encouragement. And so after that, I decided that I'd try to do it. And
awesome. What school in London did you study?
I went to Goldsmiths College in New Cross.
I'm not familiar. I wanted so much to go to East 15 in the 70s. That's the end of that story. So you were in San Francisco, also mm-hmm. doing theater?
Mm-hmm. I went to American Conservatory Theater there.
Heard of that place.
And so I was there for 3 years and then was in New York for four years.
And how was your time in New York?
It was great. I love it there. And I worked worked enough to feel like I was, you know, a working actor. Mm-hmm. I moved there in 2007. The bottom shortly fell out of the economy.
Yes, it did.
And the writers mm-hmm. all went on strike. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of on-camera stuff stopped, which wasn't really my focus, but
a lot of work dried up.
And then it seemed, I don't know if this is the only true way of looking at it, but it seemed that when work started happening again, all of a sudden famous people were doing Broadway. And then the Broadway actors were doing off-Broadway. And so all of us who had just gotten there kept getting knocked down. And, you know, that's one way to thread the narrative. But that felt kind of a part of my experience.
No, that's actually quite valid. When I was in New York, you had occasionally high caliber, I'm using air quotes, mm-hmm. air quotes. Four cups make an air quart. The high caliber actors were not doing off Broadway. Every now and then you did, but they were in that period between doing showcases and Broadway, mm-hmm. and they were stepping up their game a little bit, but they weren't. So, but you're right. Now you're getting a lot of very well known, famous performers, mm-hmm. Both on screen and stage, mm-hmm. doing off Broadway stuff.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
That changes things. That would have been very different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, then my husband and I wanted to have a kid and wanted to be closer to family, and here we are.
Yeah, so that's so. When did you move here to Austin, Texas?
2011.
2011. Mm-hmm. So you've been here about, if I'm doing my math right, 7 years.
I think so. Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. And is this your first time on offstage and on the air?
Yes. This
Why?
Is my first time in this building.
That makes
building.
No sense.
Well, I haven't done a whole lot since moving here. I did a show my first year here, and then I got pregnant and had a kid and was out of it for a while. And
she did Drowning Girls.
Did a show with Jenny a couple years ago.
Wait, you were in Drowning Girls. Mm-hmm. I saw that.
She was the right tub.
Right tub. Right tub. Longer hair. Longer. Wetter hair.
You did a great job.
Thank you.
It's another show I really, really enjoyed. So, Jenny, you spent time in New York.
I did.
When were you there? Were you all there at the same time?
We were just talking about this. Yes, briefly. I was there.
You were at NYU. Were you at NYU? Yes.
I was there 2011. My first day at NYU, I watched the plane hit the towers.
2001.
Yeah. And like a dummy was like, ooh, that's weird. New York is weird. And
was it like we were all looking at that kind of stuff happening?
I know. So I was there 2001 to 2008, and then I moved to Boston. Sight unseen. Should have done that a little differently.
Should have seen that scene before.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. When I lived in New York, I said if I ever leave New York, I'm going to go to Boston.
Yeah,
and I didn't do it. I ended up going to Chicago, but Boston was a Great town. Did you do theater in Boston?
I did not. I went, I needed a break from the city, and I applied to a grad program that, just on a whim, because it was free, basically, and I got in, and so I went for the program and did not like Boston at all.
Really?
I really did not. I mean, I taught while I was there, so I think that's also part of it. Boston does a really great job of preserving its history, but I lived in Dorchester, and I taught in Dorchester, and it's a small town, and
it's
there's
a provincial
a lot
town.
Of
it's really
racism.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. There's so much racism. There's so much violence, gang violence, yep. street gangs, and the school that I taught in was like, we were on lockdown at least 3 out of 5 days a week, and I mean,
yeah, there was an area there in the late 70s, early 80s called the Combat Zone. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's there anymore, but if you were a person of color and you walked in there, you did not walk out.
Yeah, and
a lot of big time racism dealing with.
Just a lot of small town mentality. Mm-hmm. And especially, I think, teaching in that situation and seeing how the city reinforces the racism. It was just like, felt like a mountain that I couldn't climb. And I don't really like the...
And did you go straight from Boston to here?
I did. So in like the 10th month of winter, 1 year, I rolled out a map and was like,
dude, the last time I was in Boston, I was just trying to get a block and the wind and the snow. And I was like, I'm just going to this bar.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
that was my last time this in way. Boston.
Yeah. And you know what? I grew up in Pennsylvania. I grew up in what they called the snow belt. But Boston is
that wet,
the wind
blowing,
chill.
It's different feels, than Chicago.
Yeah,
it's
it feels
crazy.
Like your face is falling off your body. And also the town like shuts down when it snows, like the tea stops running. And it's like, this happens for 10 months out of the year. Why, what? And so anyway, I rolled out a map and was like, I need sunshine and an arts community that is outside of universities. And I pointed to Austin, never having been here, and San Francisco, never having been to San Francisco. And I just chose.
There's not sun in San Francisco.
I know.
It depends on what neighborhood you're
in. I know.
In.
And I wanted
what time of day.
I wanted a better cost of living, too. So that was actually what ruled out San Francisco. So I just drove down.
And here you are.
Yep.
Wow.
Here I am.
So how long from that day to you being here?
From
how long
what
did,
day?
How long, the day you were,
you
the 10th month of
I
winter, and like, I got to get out and roll out the map. How long did it take you to actually get here?
Oh, that was the end of February. And I moved at the end of that school year. So June.
Middle of June, yeah, they get out late.
Put the dog in the car and drove down.
And was that 2010?
The 18-year-old dog that's blind?
When was that? 2010.
2010. Mm-hmm. So you were here for a year before or so.
Mm-hmm. That is the dog that's blind. Yeah. That dog has been with me since I was in undergrad. He and I have been together for almost 15 years.
And what is your dog's name?
Tyler.
Tyler. Do you have... animals?
I have a pet cat.
A pet cat? Well, that's that. we'll allow animal. That. What's your cat's name?
His name is Bigfoot Blue.
love that.
We call him name. Blue. He is a neurotic. Bigfoot.
Well, we are all animal guardians here, so that means we're all good people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're...
that's the test.
It is. You can stay. Well, we're plumb out of time. We got to leave the backstage area because they're gonna clean up the dumpsters here. I can hear the trucks going.
My feet are soaking wet too.
Yeah, it's
time
real,
to go.
It's real
Thank
stinky.
You guys for joining us back here. And Jenny, we look forward to hearing about this horror theater piece happening in China.
Yeah.
It's kind of exciting. Yeah.
It may change during the development, but that's where we're starting.
Cool. Well, good. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
We'll see you guys. Bye.